With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
You're listening to a Score North podcast right now, and if you're a business owner, so are your customers. In fact, I could be talking about your business right now, telling the tens of thousands of loyal fans about you and sending them to your business. Find out how you can partner with your favorite Score North podcast. Visit ScoreNorth.com now and enter keyword partner. Fill out the form, and we'll get in touch with you quickly. Once Phil, Judd, Declan, or others start talking about your company, you'll be amazed at how many fans start showing up. So visit ScoreNorth.com now and enter keyword partner.
These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Tell me one thing about the game today. Why did our kicker miss the game-winning kick wide right when they were in Arizona right there? And it was wider than kicking it right to Minnesota, which is probably 1,000 miles right, right there. Tell me why, Mackie, it was that wide right.
I can tell you.
With a game on the line, when a guy kicks 250-yard field goals to make the game interesting, and my brother right here said to me, look, all I got to do is this. All I got to do is, with 30 seconds left and the clock running, why don't you go up top like Joe Gibbs would when the Redskins were a dynasty and maybe take a shot and win the game when you have a terrible field goal kicking history in Minnesota Vikings NFL history? Tell me why. Can you just tell me why? Please tell me why.
Wow, dude. That was Bob in Pennsylvania, the legendary Bob in Pennsylvania. On Ventline yesterday. We're still sitting here after hopefully a good... Did you guys get a good night's sleep, or did you toss and turn thinking about Greg Joseph?
Decent night's sleep.
I slept great. Decent night's sleep. I slept like a baby.
I did too, because Ventline is therapy. Like, I usually, my routine after a devastating loss is, you know, a good 90-plus minutes of Ventline, which people can go check out on the Purple Daily podcast feed, ScoreNorth.com, YouTube channel. And then I scroll through Twitter for like another 3 hours and just like fight with people. And then I'm just too exhausted to wake up in the middle of the night. So I just crash for like 7 hours. Yeah. That's my routine.
Yeah, I was great once it got done. And you know what? I love Bob because Bob is again, like if you transplanted all East Coast fans to this state, that's Bob.
That's Bob.
And he's so harsh that you feel cleansed. It's a Vikings juice cleanse. Mm-hmm. In this case, it's a Viking kicker cleanse.
And it doesn't cost you $11 a bottle of juice.
Yeah. Exactly right. It's but free, I mean, I felt cleansed. It was all gone.
So if you're looking for a Vikings juice cleanse, I like the way Judd put it. Go check out Ventline from yesterday. Let's get into statements, boys. Monday statements, a staple here on Mackie and Judd, daily Minnesota sports entertainment. I think our guy, Randy in Cottage Grove, is going to join the show at some point.
I'm going to guess he didn't sleep well.
Yeah. I guess we'll find out what his Monday is like. But who wants to start? Judd, you want to start us with some statements?
Oh, sure. Sure. Okay. I'll start with the low-hanging fruit, but it's necessary. I am sick of kickers. I am sick of kickers. I'm sick of kicker problems. I'm sick of the fact that the Vikings can't solve this. I'm sick of the fact that while they are more than willing to spend on a lot of positions, that they seem to go to the bargain bin. Greg Joseph is on a one-year $750,000 contract and hadn't kicked competitively in a game, at least for a real field goal attempt, since 2018. Yeah. I'm sick of this repeating itself over Blair Walsh, Daniel Carlson, Dan Bailey. I'm just so tired.
Yeah, I saw a note today from Ben Gessling, Star Tribune. He quote tweeted Mike Zimmer's quote yesterday, where Zimmer a Zen Mike Zimmer after the game who was like, yeah, I've just kind of come to know that kickers are going to miss kicks. It's part of the game. It's like Mike Zimmer is oddly Zen, which we can get to in a second too. But the Vikings, I want to say during Mike Zimmer's career, I think was the time span, have the seventh worst field goal make percentage in the NFL, which is actually better than I thought. Honestly, yeah. I actually thought it was going to be worse. But like, the Vikings are at like 80%, and there's a couple other teams in like the mid to upper 70s. But I mean, I don't understand how you can look so great with a 53-yard field goal or whatever it was against the Bengals last week. You can knock home, I think it was a 52-yarder. And then the extra point, which, by the way, people aren't talking enough about. The Vikings lost that game by one, and that dude missed an extra point as well. We're focusing only on the field goal, which was his shot at redemption for the missed extra point, and he misses two kicks inside 40 yards. And I think, actually, I'll piggyback off Judd. Here's my first statement, all right? We can dissect the defense didn't do this, and the offense could have done this in the second half, and Mike Zimmer, clock management, this. Sometimes NFL games just meander and weave their way for 3 hours to a 37-yard field goal that your kicker is supposed to make. Like, is it really that much to ask for Greg Joseph to just make a 37-yarder and make everything else for the previous 3 hours go away? It really shouldn't be that much to ask.
No, it shouldn't be, but here's what I don't get. Why has Rick Spielman, the Vikings GM, for all these years, insisted on tempting fate over and over and over again by going to the, we'll pick this guy off waivers now. And he tried with Carlson, but I'll still go back to Mike Zimmer and a rookie kicker do not mesh, right? What Childress did when he signed Ryan Longwell to end the Vikings kicking problems back in 2006 was the right move. Just end it. Pay the guy. Just pay the guy. Give him a really nice contract and say, you know what? For the most part, we no longer have to be concerned about this. I don't understand why the Vikings are always tempting fate by going on the cheap or trying to, you know, trade for Kari Vedvik. Oh, my God, our guy's struggling. So we're going to trade for Kari Vedvik, a fifth-round pick, which, by the way, we know to Spielman is gold. So I guess my question is, at what point in time wouldn't you have just said, you know what I'm going to do here? I don't like this because of the cap, but I'm going to sign a kicker to a very fair market contract because I don't want this to continue to be a problem for my team. Yeah.
And then I would say, I think the knee-jerk reaction from a lot of people, and maybe even Mike Zimmer deep down, even though he suppressed this reaction at the podium yesterday, is to say, oh, we'll just get rid of him. Just now you got to cut him. He missed an extra point, missed a field goal. I'm not going to do that. You guys have already played musical chairs with Daniel Carlson. You've played musical chairs with all these other guys, Dan Bailey.
Yes.
If you've identified Greg Joseph and you were confident all throughout the offseason and the preseason and you were confident after week one, then if they start to work out kickers, I will really go apoplectic. At least commit now and instill some confidence in the kicker that you brought on to be your kicker number one.
And it would just, if they do that, continue the cycle, right? It's a cycle. It's a bad relationship with kickers, and they continue down this path. So if they go out and, like, I don't know, they sign one now. We're going to bring a guy in who got cut in training camp, but we saw some film. You know, it doesn't fix the problem. The only thing that would have fixed the problem is if they had presented a guy at some point in time with a four-year contract, paid him pretty well, and said, fix the problem. But think about it, Phil. They've never, with this regime, they've never done that. They thought they did with Carlson, but he was a rookie, which you knew was going to be a problem for Mike. And I guess they started with Blair Walsh, who actually had been good and then went downhill. But it's just this vicious cycle of always trying. So if they cut Joseph now, they're going to bring in another guy who's going to miss a key field goal.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of amazing. I mean, it's been – we're probably overplaying it because there's other teams that clearly suffer from, you know, kicker problems, but – it's been 23 years. Gary Anderson missed that field goal in 1998, and I think it's pretty safe to say that for 23 years, with the exception of a few Ryan Longwell years in there where you felt pretty confident, like the peak Longwell years, you felt pretty good. But for most of 23 years, Vikings fans have felt anxiety and other terrible emotions when kickers line up for key field goals. Like, if you're a Ravens fan, there's a chance Justin Tucker might miss. But you feel pretty damn good. When Matt right. Prater lines up for a field goal from 62 yards, that was that wasn't a game winner, but like you feel
ball's going through, baby.
Feel pretty good, man. A Vikings kicker lines up for a 37 yarder and you're just like, oh my God, this is what's gonna happen? Is it a botched snap? Wide left, wide right. Yeah, turns out it was wide right. All right, Declan, statement.
Yeah, my first statement as it relates to the Vikings and all of Minnesota sports, too, and my statement is very simple. It's existence is pain. Existence is pain watching what unfolded yesterday, and also it's just a microcosm of all of Minnesota sports things. So when you're watching that Vikings game and you first see him miss that extra point on the third touchdown, you know that eventually you're going to pay the piper and that's going to come back to haunt you. So what happens over the course of the game? You battle back, you take haymakers, you go back and forth, you get a big stop on the two-minute warning, you get the ball back, Kirk marches down the field, the offensive line holds up, and you're thinking, oh, this is it? And then you see the kicker run out, and to Mackey's point, you're still holding your breath because we're scarred for the last 20 years of Vikings kickers. I'm still scarred when the baseball team goes the postseason and they don't know what to do. I'm still scarred because the Wild can't find a center and they can't get their best player of all time under contract. I'm not that excited about the Timberwolves, even though they're trending in the right direction, because they've been a dumpster fire for the last 20 years. And Minnesota sports, what happened yesterday is a perfect example of existence being pain. Trying to watch this team, these teams, these four men's teams, win a championship or rise up and do something in a clutch moment. And I know we're overreacting, but that's the fun part. But to me, this existence is pain, trying to watch this unfold week in and week out.
I just like that your pain went to more of like a macro level yesterday. It wasn't just like, oh my God, how are they not winning this game? It was like your pain seeped into like your entire life as a Minnesota sports fan.
That's what it felt like to me.
Each team has its problems. And yeah, that is. But on Ventline last night, when you have people legitimately not being smart asses saying, how could they not just try and score a touchdown? They should never let the kicker on the field. Like, that is a level of just absolute pain that most fan bases don't know. Like,
I can't go to that point. Like,
I can't either, but think about it.
There are people, I think, do I think the Vikings should have done something more productive with the final 40 seconds than just let it all run down and say, I think we're good, right? I mean, that was Mike Zimmer not trusting his running backs to not fumble. It was a lack of trust, even though he was great on that final drive in Kirk Cousins. Zimmer was like, 37 yard, knowing the history of kicking under me as a coach and also historically, like, I'm good on 37 yards. I would have tried to move it inside a 30-yarder to make it even more of a chip shot. But there are a lot of people saying, like, no, you needed to go for a touchdown. I mean, that's a little far. When you get inside 40 yards, it's just about maneuvering, I think, and trying to get it to the right hash mark.
I could see going for a touchdown and taking one shot and then trying to kick the field goal. But would you have trepidation about attempting a 37-yard field goal in the NFL? You got problems.
Dude.
37 yards. Like, I don't need to. Okay, if it was 23, I think he shanks it regardless. I mean, it was just that bad.
All right, Judd, your second statement.
Oh, Kirk Cousins should be pissed. Off of what we just talked about, Kirk Cousins yesterday did everything that Kirk Cousins is paid to do, and he did a very good job. And you know what, against the Bengals statistically I thought he was good, but I thought there was more he could have done yesterday. I'm pretty convinced he did everything that he could do. He was did a great job of distributing the ball to Osborne and Thielen and Jefferson. And that last drive, the second to last drive, was I thought the play calling was not good and it was downright ugly, but the last drive was very pretty and very productive. And we always talk about what Kirk makes as far as taking away from the salary cap and being a problem, but let's talk about what Kirk makes when the head coach looks at that contract and thinks, okay, this is my $30 million quarterback. He needs to be allowed to, when he's playing this well, take a shot, right? Take a shot. And to allow that time to tick off the clock down to 4 seconds, like it was Case Keenum and you don't trust him. Totally flies in the face of how Kirk played in that game. And if I was Kirk, I'd be pissed. I would have wanted an opportunity with the weapons that I had, right or wrong, to take a shot, to try and score a touchdown, dagger it, end the game. And not only did the Vikings not do that, but they did the opposite, which was 40 seconds left. Okay, what should we do? Let's allow almost all of it to come off the clock with the quarterback who played a great game and was hot. Why?
Yeah, I don't advocate for just like lobbing passes into the end zone mm-hmm. when you're inside a 40-yard field goal. Mm-hmm. To me, the risk reward there, you know, you're supposed to make that field goal. So let's make sure that we pin that on the wall there, that you're supposed to make that field goal. I agree with your overall point, though. Kirk was mostly excellent in that game. Mm-hmm. You know, the first half, he jumps out, boom, play action. What, second play of the game, 64-yard pass to K.J. Osborne. On the final drive, he had four big completions, including that 3rd and 10 to Adam Thielen. Game totally on the line. They know you're going to throw. You can't run play action. Those are the situations that historically and statistically he is terrible in. And he rose above and was really good on that final drive, and he did what he was supposed to do. He should have gotten credit for a successful fourth quarter comeback. He only has two as a Viking, and there's a few that the defense has either given away or, in this case, a kicker gave away. Now, that happens to all the other quarterbacks as well that try to get fourth quarter comebacks, but he deserved more. Kirk Cousins deserved more than he got yesterday because of Greg Joseph missing that kick.
If I am Kirk Cousins and I am paid like Kirk is, and there's 41 seconds left on the clock, and my coach gets in my ear and says we're going to allow the clock to wind down, I'm pissed off. I'm not saying that he should have been allowed to throw an irresponsible pass, but my God, he is at that point in time leading a super impressive drive. There's other options as far as plays go. I would want at least a shot at another play before we call that timeout. And instead, again, he got treated like he was a rookie quarterback who you didn't trust. And that's the fundamental part of the problem, in my opinion, in the relationship that exists on the field between Mike Zimmer and Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, so in that moment, Mike Zimmer isn't thinking, oh, Kirk looks pretty good on this drive. He's thinking, okay, Dalvin fumbled last week in a similar situation. Kirk usually is overwhelmed, and even you could even reference the previous drive where they went 3 and out and he throws a weird check down on 3rd and 7 to Amir Abdullah.
Yep, that's bad.
So Zimmer's thinking about, okay, well, it was 5 minutes ago he looked overwhelmed, and the offensive line also regularly looks overwhelmed in these exact situations. It's a miracle that we've made it inside, you know, a 40-yard field goal. And so I think, like, again, I'm not justifying it. I see what Mike Zimmer was thinking, but there has to be something, to your point, more productive that you can do with those 40 seconds. Even running the ball. Like, is there something you can do? Can you run the ball to the exact middle of the field for 3 yards even and make it a 34-yarder from the exact point that Greg Joseph wants it to be, you know?
But in Kirk's defense, Kirk was playing well enough and was doing a lot of the things that we've asked for, where he should have been given that opportunity, not a, okay, guy, thanks a lot. You've done a real nice job. Now, that's my problem, is we rip, and I think we're right, we rip Kirk for a lot of things, but that was one where I will defend Kirk and say, okay, when he's playing like that, at least allow the ball to stay in Kirk's hands for one more play, as opposed to, again, he was being treated like, yeah, you're an okay QB. When you're playing that well and that drive looks that good, the lack of trust, and the other problem too is this one. Clint Kubiak, okay? If you have an OC that Mike trusts for sure, he's probably in Mike's ear being like, let's do this. This was clearly a Zimmer orchestrated. I don't really trust the quarterback, and the OC is 34, and I'm not sure I trust him. And so we're just going to do the real safe thing.
But why did his, like, in his trust power rankings in that moment, why did, we're good to run the kicker out without trying to gain extra yards, rank, like, higher than all the other things?
That's my point. Think about that.
It's so weird.
Think about what you just said.
On Mike Zimmer, here's my next statement, presented by Federated. Federated's here to give you frontline protection and risk management tools if you're a business owner out there. They're here to protect your bottom line, and they're here to protect your employees, or at least help you protect your employees. Find out more about all the resources and people and tools that Federated provides at federatedinsurance.com. And remember, at Federated, it's our business to protect yours. Mike Zimmer is a defensive coordinator, and a struggling one at that. So do you guys ever watch Bar Rescue?
Oh, yes.
With John Taffer? We've talked about Bar Rescue.
Love Bar Rescue. Love John Taffer.
It's one of my favorite shows. It's always on Sunday nights, like during the non-football season when there's not amazing games like Chiefs-Ravens. I'm a binge Shark Tank and binge Bar Rescue kind of a guy on Sunday nights. And one of the themes that comes back, like every other episode, John Taffer will barrel in and he'll meet an owner of a bar that loves to sing or something, right? Yes. Like they love to do something. they own the bar, but I'm a singer. I'm a karaoke singer, yeah. And this is my karaoke bar, and I'm up, and they're singing, and like everything else in the bar is crumbling, right? Like the service sucks, the management is terrible beneath the owner. You know, customers are unhappy. There's mold in the kitchen, and there's all these things happening. But I'm a singer, and that's what I do. It's like, no, you're a bar, you're a business owner. You own the entire bar, and Mike Zimmer feels like, you know, any number of bar owners on Bar Rescue that are like, I coach defense, and that's what I focus on. I have this head coaching job so that I can do whatever I want on defense. It's like, no, Mike, you are the head coach of a football team. You oversee offense. You oversee the quarterback and the relationship. You oversee late half game management, timeout and strategy management, game theory. You oversee all these things. And it's like he just wants to focus on defense, and that's going poorly. They've had one of the worst defenses in the NFL now for all 16 games last year and the first two games of this year. And so I just like, if John Taffer were to barrel in, if they had an NFL team rescue show on Paramount Network, he'd come in and he would tell Mike Zimmer, shut it the bleep down. We're going to have a come to Jesus meeting for the next 72 hours. You are the coach of a full football team, not just the defensive coordinator. And even that's going, you can't even sing and you're trying to be the karaoke singer. Focus on running your business.
The best part, the best part too about Bar Rescue is how they always start the episode as 5 years ago, business was good. Like, you know, they opened up, yeah. And that's the same thing with five years ago. He had the number one defense in the NFL, and then he got waxed in Philly, and everything has basically been crumbling over the last 32 weeks. Yeah. It is hilarious when you put the parallels together.
But seriously, where are the Wilfs? Where's Spielman? Where's somebody to say, what, you know, and not now, years ago. What are you doing exactly? Like, why aren't you more concerned about the team? But it's as if it's the weirdest thing now, because it's just been, what, essentially 3 years. And I think Kirk crystallized it. I think because he and Kirk aren't close, I think it crystallized the fact that there is a disconnect between Mike and really the offense and special teams, where he just thought, well, Kirk can be put on autopilot and he'll just run, and then it's like, no, he really can't be. And then Mike's like, well, now I'm ticked off about that. So I'm just amazed that nobody has had, or at least tried, it seems like, a come to Jesus with Mike about that.
And then you got, you know, this is apples to oranges, but on national TV last night, the camera zooms in on John Harbaugh in a key moment, and he's in like, was it a little bit for show? Yes. But John Harbaugh, Lamar, do you want to go for it? Right. And you could just tell, like, those guys are those, like, that's the relationship. It's Lamar. It's John Harbaugh. And guess what? John Harbaugh, I don't think, came from this like 20-year background in offensive coaching. He was a special teams guy.
Yep,
right.
Special teams coordinator.
But he understands relationships.
Yep.
Lamar Jackson comes in. They build the entire offense differently around him.
That's the most important.
And it's very obvious that those guys spend a ton of time together in those key moments.
That's the most important thing. They changed their offense completely, rightfully so. And they didn't say, well, we don't do those things. They said, oh, this might work really, really well. Let's give it a go.
Yeah. What are your strengths? How can we cater all of this to you? It's like Kirk Cousins came in fairness, as a mercenary. And they were like, okay, like that's great. Just let us know what your strengths are. We may or may not consider them. Oh, you're not mobile? Well, you're going to have to kind of figure it out, because we have a bunch of rotating parts on the offensive line. Although yesterday, Kirk Cousins was very mobile. Guy ran for like 35
Cordell
yards,
Cousins.
Scrambled to his left, and threw a ball on the run for a touchdown. So.
Cordell Cousins, Kirk Vick. Mm-hmm. You know, there's Kirk McNair. We can
it's great.
Do a lot of scrambling ones. My next statement is piggybacking off Mackey's point of Zimmer's defense. My statement is this defense is not going to be great. And we heard all offseason that they did everything they could to fix this defense. Dalvin Tomlinson gets plugged in. Michael Pierce comes back. You had to sew up some defensive back issues. And we all thought, all right, last year was a weird year. You had to play a lot of rookies, a lot of inexperienced guys. You didn't have Daniil Hunter either. You were the 30th, 28th defense last season. You should be able to return to top 10. I think at best this is going to be, again, an average defense. I think it was a poor assumption to just assume that you can go from 30th to top 10 overnight with six plug-and-play players on veterans who were on the wrong side of their careers and the reasons that they were veterans and they were garbage, or not garbage, but garage sale signings. Look, I think there's some great personnel on this defense. Daniil Hunter had an amazing day yesterday. He had a couple sacks. Eric Kendricks is one of the best linebackers in the league and was able to go, and Harrison Smith's a decent safety. But those are three guys. That's it. And this defense, to assume it can be just return and flip a switch and go to top 10 was a poor assumption. And I think at best, when you're giving up 61 points and 950 yards through the first two games, that ain't going to cut it. And I know Kyler Murray is awesome, too. He's a cheat code. He's literally Madden 99 rating, running around, throwing off the back foot 14 yards past the line of scrimmage. The dude's insane. But this defense returning to top 10 was a poor assumption, and it's not going to be great.
Could I make a case? Everything you said is correct. Could I make a case that the defense actually stepped up in a few really key spots in that game yesterday? Like, I think there's sure. There's two ways to look at defense. There's your overall, like, you know, from an overall standpoint, giving up 30 plus points and giving up 8 yards of play was a disaster, and I am not exonerating them. But you're going to have some games like that, and then the question is, okay, are there moments where you just need a stop or you just need a turnover? And the Vikings defense delivered on those things. They got the pick six when they needed it in the second half. They got a couple big stops. They only allowed 10 points in the second half, as garbage as they were in the first half. Daniil Hunter gets that big sack on third down to turn it over on downs. And ultimately, they get the ball back to the Vikings offense after the Vikings flamed out on the initial what we thought was supposed to be game-winning drive. Boom, they force a three and out. That might have been the Daniil Hunter sack I'm thinking about. So they were bad overall, but the defense also, this all goes back to Greg Joseph. It's like, I think the conversation, if he makes right. that kick, I think the discussion would be, boy, the defense was bad, but Cam Dantzler came in, looked okay, Daniil Hunter looked amazing, and they got the big turnover pick six when they needed it, and so maybe Nick Vigil can be a mainstay if Anthony Barr isn't healthy. And because Greg Joseph missed the kick,
sure.
now the defense is just straight garbage.
But,
you know?
But to Dex's point, from the 10,000-foot view, the issue is this. This defense needs to be outstanding. Like, it needs to be outstanding a lot, and it's not close. Like we can't be if the Vikings were an offensive machine, then I think we say, yeah, look, they rebounded in the second half, and Hunter was fantastic, and they made some big plays, and that's great. But this team is built around four quarters of really good, solid defense. Like, you need to be one of the best teams in the league at this. You remade this thing. Your head coach is all in. That's all he does for the most part. And so I would say that this is what we've seen, and it's not a complete shock, but it's definitely a disappointment, because we talked about this. This defense needs to be top five. Like, it needs to be top five. And if it's not, then what were you doing? Because you told us that you were going out and signing guys and doing this and doing that. And look, mm-hmm. Dalvin Tomlinson, like it or not, was your marquee free agent addition. Like, that was your, we are going to Saks Fifth Avenue to sign a player. Dalvin Tomlinson, we're getting him off the shelf.
Saks Fifth
football.
Avenue.
And,
what I mean,
S-A-C-K-S yeah. Fifth Avenue.
Anyway, yeah.
Do you even know the pun you just made? I think you just, like, you blacked out. That was a great pun.
Oh, the Saks thing? No, I was actually going for a elite store. Elite, but yes, that's good.
You went with, like, the perfect
pun. Yeah, the Saks, well, I mean, it's early, but I'm still on my game. You see, that's the difference. I'm on my game. The Vikings are off their game. Oh, that was God. A good – yeah, it was a good – it's a great pun. Now that you pointed out, thank you very much.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people did a victory lap. You know, I don't want to have a Kirk Cousins contract discussion on this episode, because he did his job yesterday, but a lot of people – did a victory lap, I feel like. Vikings Twitter, Vikings media, a lot of fans. You know, you guys said that they couldn't sign any players. Look at all the players they signed.
Right. way.
Well, I mean, they went to the used DVD bin. Patrick Peterson might be a Hall of Famer, but what's he done the first 2 weeks?
Yep.
You know, Breshad Breeland's been a disaster the first 2 weeks.
He can't. I don't think that he can play in this system.
So he's like, more of a zone cornerback? Is that what people are saying?
You probably got to get him as much help as possible. Because he does not look, unless I'm wrong here and he's about to rebound, he does not look like he can play in what Mike wants. And Mike's not going to change what he wants.
Yeah. I have a Gopher's one.
All right.
I got one. Wants a little positive.
I got one more Vikings one.
Okay. Let's take one more trip around the room. Declan?
Yeah. I'm down.
Dalvin.
I was throwing it to Declan. Do you have a...
Oh, I thought it was Judd, though. I thought...
No, I think it's back to me.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it is back to Judd.
I'm sorry.
Oh, man. Nice job.
Well, Judd just talked about Saks Fifth Avenue for
and him
half
being
hour,
on his so. Game. Where's Mackey on his game this early? 7 a.m. in Seattle right now.
It's even earlier.
I was playing on your point. All right. Here's my Vikings statement. And yes, I will preface this by saying this man, when he was healthy yesterday, had a marvelous game. But Dalvin Cook will never hold up to the workload the Vikings put upon him. He just won't. He's going to there. As he ages, the injuries he incurs are not going to decrease. They are going to increase. And as great as Cook was in the first half, he got banged up. And that's what happens when you ask an aging now. And for a running back, he's aging. When you ask an aging Dalvin Cook to basically be the workhorse for an entire game, and you're like, this game is going to rotate around this guy. Now, I'm not saying that it's a bad idea to use him on play action as a decoy at times, but when you give him the workload that they did, and he had 22 carries, and it would have been far more if he hadn't got hurt, it doesn't work to do what they want to do, which is basically say, we're going to run you into the ground, and I fear it's only going to get worse as he ages, that we're going to get more of the, you know, twists an ankle, hurts a knee, just things like that.
I think you just have to deal with it. You know, I think he's in his prime. He's highly paid. This is the time to just run him into the ground. And if it, you know, I don't think you can ease off. You know, I don't think so. He had 24 touches in that game yesterday. Probably would have had even more if not for the ankle tweak, right? Let's say he was tracking for 30.
Absolutely.
I don't think you can go into games and be like, okay, let's cap it at 18 touches or 20 touches, because A, now you're shortchanging your offensive output, and B, you're not guaranteeing anything. Like, if he steps foot on the field and has 15 touches, he could get hurt. So would I want him going Ricky Williams 1999 or whatever, that year where Ricky Williams carried the ball like 400 times?
And he just can't.
No, but I'm riding him at this point. I've committed to this contract. He's one of the best running backs in the NFL, and I'm just gonna have to cross my fingers.
I am going, and this is doable, very doable. Way more play action with Dalvin, where he doesn't actually carry the football, and throwing it more. You have three wide receivers now. For the first time in a long time, you have three, not two, three. Play action. It will freeze defenses. Dalvin is still feared. A healthy Dalvin is feared far more than a banged up one, right? So I actually think that there is a way to still use him for a lot of snaps and still get him a very fair workload. But if you go back through the play-by-play of that game yesterday, you can find many instances where throwing the ball would have made sense, and the Vikings still insist on trying to run the football. I'm just saying, let's balance things out here. Play action with Dalvin Cook, but let's also be cognizant of the fact that you now employ three wide receivers who are all threats, because KJ Osborne looks damn good.
Yeah. Yep. All right, Dex.
I have like a final weekend observation of a ridiculous thing that I watched in my apartment unfold on Friday night. So I'm going to save it to the back end, because I know you have a Gopher statement that will probably tie better to Judd's workload statement with Dalvin Cook.
Not really. I mean, it's just a Gopher football positivity statement. But I will deliver it here real quick and then move out of the way. The Gophers, this is maybe this is a write that down prediction. I'll decide on Wednesday. The Gophers will be 8-1 heading into the Iowa game on November 13th. They went in, and now Colorado, listen, it wasn't Alabama, but Colorado's a good team that went toe-to-toe with Texas A&M, I believe, the week before. They go on the road and beat that team 30-0 and allow like 50 offensive yards to Colorado. I mean, that was and the Gophers probably left points on the board. That was a thrashing. And now their next opponents are Bowling Green at home. Just win that game. I don't care if it's ugly. That's going to be a just win it. At Purdue, okay, Purdue went toe-to-toe with Notre Dame, played pretty well. Nebraska, not a total gimme game. Maryland, but these are all games like Bowling Green, Purdue, Nebraska, Maryland. Northwestern looks bad. Illinois. And then you get Iowa, Indiana, Wisconsin. Iowa's fifth in the country right now. So I am sensing a little momentum. Maybe even a game, maybe even a college game day, ESPN College Game Day on November 13th. If Iowa can hold serve too.
Oh boy. Oh, you had to take a shot at the Hawkeyes. You know what intrigues me now? The Purdue game.
Yeah.
The Purdue game, because I'm used to Purdue being garbage, it feels like, for the most part. And Purdue would be tough. But that was impressive. Just quickly, Dex, before you go, to piggyback off of your Gopher statement, here's mine. The Gophers should never, ever, 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 ever again play a non-conference game against a Pac-12 team on the road. Lest the Pac-12 network shows that game, I had to watch it in non-HD. Doogie had to come to my house to watch it because he couldn't find a bar with Pac-12.
I am in Pac-12 country. Get this. I'm in Pac-12 country. I went to a Gopher and Minnesota themed bar. And they didn't get Pac-12 Network. Does anyone in the country get Pac-12 Network besides Judd on standard definition?
On standard definition. I'm told it's Charter ridiculous. Actually has HD. But anyway, this was just don't ever.
Why can't
play
they just
Pac-12
show
team.
The game on Big Ten Network, too? Like, why can't they just have the game on two different
networks?
They're
showing networks? A different game because they're showing something else.
I'm a little jealous Judd invited someone else into his house to watch a game.
Actually, you know what? Full disclosure, full story, I didn't invite him.
So we
were going to meet at a sports bar to watch it.
Okay.
Because Dukes, in Dukes fashion, God bless him, had called the bar the night before. You get Pac-12 Network. They're like, oh, yeah, absolutely. He gets there. Nah, we don't get it. He found another bar. Same thing. Drove there. They're like, oh, sorry, I guess we don't. So he finally calls me up and he just says, what's your address? I'm coming over.
Veteran play.
Judd hiding all the empty Surly cans, yeah.
Pushing
him under the couch.
I had to clean up the living room.
God, amazing. All right, wrap us up here.
All right, final statement. From a very chill and relaxed Friday evening in my apartment in Minneapolis. My statement is, if you're going to go through a breakup, don't ask for your stuff from a two-story balcony. So, and by the way, this has nothing to do with me. I want to make that very clear before I'm not going to bury that lead there. on Friday night, just a relaxed night, I was dog sitting. I had my buddy Tito with me, a great corgi, just him and I hanging out, watching Star Wars. Very active Friday night for Declan in the Tito's. North Loop. And all of a sudden, I have my window open, and I hear this guy just like yelling and like, hey, give me my stuff. Hey, give me my stuff. I want my shirt, my hat, my cologne. My shirt, my hat, my cologne. Those three very specific things.
The cologne?
The cologne. So
what, is this a curb?
Who even wears cologne anymore?
I wear cologne.
But it was hilarious because he was on the phone with her at first. And then he clearly went to the balcony, which is like right next to my window. And now me and the dog are watching this unfold because we are now just super enthralled. Eventually, after like pleading, she does give him the stuff, but when she gives the cologne, the cologne's obviously in a glass bottle. So when she throws it from a two-story balcony, shatters everywhere.
Did she throw it at him, or did she kind of lob it down?
She kind of lobbed it, and I think Butters McGruff maybe even dropped the bottle. But
yeah, Troy Williamson down there,
dude,
really tough.
If you're gonna do the breakup, you can't be asking your stuff for the two-story balcony. You're setting yourself up for like a music video disaster. Like you can't be doing that, man. You're gonna have to eat that hat, shirt, and cologne, fella. Like I'm sorry. Like if you can get two out of the three things in a breakup, good for you.
You can't. Yeah. If sometimes there's been some hooded sweatshirts that are just left behind. Sometimes you gotta leave a man behind.
Yes.
I'm confused though. So he obviously didn't live there.
No.
Like why was the cologne there? Like I could see the hat and shirt, right?
Because like, when he wakes up in the morning, he's probably had a toothbrush,
but that's right?
Toothpaste. He didn't. He probably had some body wash, but
give me my damn Crest too. I want my Crest. Yeah. Give me my cologne.
Well, the cologne's more valuable than the toothpaste. Get it. I can see his logic.
Let's talk about cologne. I'm with Phil. Who wears cologne?
It's weird. It's too. You're trying too hard.
You have to
be very generous with how you spray it. There's a bunch of weirdos that like bathe and douse in it. You just need a tiny little bit of like a 3 ounce bottle of cologne will literally last me like a year and a half. You have to be very delicate with it.
Do you wear cologne? When do you wear cologne?
Usually I wear it almost every day. Mm-hmm.
I feel like you don't need to.
Has anyone ever commented to you I really like your cologne?
Yes. I did a persuasive speech in college of one of the few things you can control is how you smell when you want to get out of the shower, you can spray your deodorant cologne.
You're saying that like everything in life is random except how you smell?
You have control over how you smell. You have control over it with your deodorant, with your upkeep and with everything. You do have control over that. I think it's okay to wear cologne. I don't think it's that bad.
But you wear cologne to work. That surprises me. I could see going to the bars with a little bit on.
I like to smell good.
Okay.
I don't got a lot of working out here.
But. We need a Judd cologne challenge. 30 yeah. days.
I've got some that I wear to very special events. And to Dex's point about use, Dawn will spritz it on me because I don't know. Because like if you do it too much.
Yeah, it's overbearing. Yeah,
even in just doing that example, you literally hit the trigger three times. That's
right,
too many.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Spray it in the air, walk through it. That's
boom.
All you need.
Oh, really?
What I do.
Spray it in the air, walk
and
through
I haven't
it.
Done
okay,
it in
just,
14 years.
That's exactly
but, yeah.
what I do.
Yeah.
There is nothing worse boop. than the grade school than oh. in the 70s in grade school. I wore it a couple times because, you know, you
some
think it's going to be cool. And you and of course, I'm sure I bathed in it, so I completely reeked of cologne, which is just a grotesque smell.
Oof. Well, those are your Monday statements on football, kickers, cologne, life, the Gophers. I don't know what more you want here on Mackie and Judd. Daily Minnesota sports entertainment.
I'm just so pissed off at Rick Spielman. And I'll tell you, we could go and you guys can do Purple Daily and you could talk about Cousins until you're blue in the face. Vikings fans have known for years. The offensive line, problem. Kicker, problem. Corner, problem. Everybody knows it. Everybody knows that, right? And what one of those has been fixed by this doofus? We drafted. We signed. There's practice squad. It's all BS. He hasn't fixed one of three glaring problem areas. And this isn't over one season. This is like a five-year stretch. Where we know all these things suck, and the guy does nothing.
That was Chancey and Fargo on yesterday's Vikings Vent Line. A great impassioned rant. If you want the full thing and a bunch of other Vikings fans expressing their displeasure, just check out Vikings Vent Line on the Purple Daily podcast feed, scorenorth.com, or the Purple Daily YouTube channel. All right, it's time to welcome in one of the most passionate Vikings fans we know. You can follow him on Twitter at RandyVikes69. Randy in Cottage Grove, how are you holding up after the missed field goal late in that game yesterday?
Who is that? Who's the gentleman who was just going off before?
That was Chancey in Fargo.
I like that passion. That he reminds me of my buddy Ron was throwing stuff yesterday at the end, and that's what we need, a little more passion out of a lot of folks.
I saw a video going around on social media of a Vikings fan destroying his like 60 inch flat screen TV and throwing it into a fire pit. Was that your buddy Ron?
No, Ron can't afford that. He's got a lot of alimony that he's got to pay, but he comes over. We have a good time. I decided this week to bring it back, leave the tavern, bring it back home. I hosted, and we did get after it with that late start. You got a little bit more runway, if you know what I mean. So we definitely got good and lubricated, and we had a good time, and it was. We were rowdy, we were loud, and I had the stud stable all ready to go. Mm-hmm. It was gonna have. In fact, even the quarterback was gonna sneak in, believe it or not. And then, of course, it all hit the fan, as they say, and it was frustrating. It just it's a bitter taste. It's a nasty taste. Mm-hmm.
You don't seem as upset as I thought, though. I thought that you would be down in the dauber. I thought that you'd be ticked off. You seem like you're okay with this.
I'm not thrilled about it, Jeff. But last night was tough. A few of us had plans to kind of go out and roll a couple games after and just kind of take the victory into the night. And we scrapped that. We broke camp and decided we're not gonna do this isn't a night for celebration. So if anything, I'm just I'm gassed. I'm gassed. I'm bushed.
Mm. I did see in terms of just silver linings here, someone did point out that the Vikings of all the 0-2 teams have the best point differential, and they're only a game back in the division. So maybe things are on the horizon because of just how close the Vikings have played these first two games.
Is that did I miss a new rule where at the end of the year they just add up your points? Because that ain't how it works. As far as we had a big W. We had a big W Saturday. We won 11-2. Felt great. And then the next game, we lost 4-3. As far as I can tell, we ended on a loss. So that's not I don't subscribe to moral victories, in a lot of things in life, whether it's football or a divorce or anything. It's just you make your bet and you sleep in it. Right now, this bet stinks. It's rotten. It's a rotten bet. All we can hope is that the Packers lose tonight. But don't look now. But this division is not good. It's really not good. And so maybe if a team just a hair over 500 can take it. But what does that get you? Nothing. Because you watch a lot of these high flying teams, and And by the way, Zim, you got all that time left at the end, and you got a guy making that kind of scratch. You basically take a knee. Where's the faith in this guy? And if you don't trust him, cut his ass. Cut his ass. Yeah. Just kick him to the curb. Let someone cheaper take a knee. If that's what you're gonna do. Zim was gonna be a stud, not anymore. Cousins was gonna be a stud, not anymore. Not today. Just a dud stable today, and that's disappointing. And it does sting. And now you're coming home 0-2, and you got a lot of people pay a lot of good scratch to watch this team in person. A lot of people buy a lot of drinks at the bar. A lot of people had four bottles of Yag that we went through yesterday, and for nothing.
Oh,
for nothing.
It's aggressive. Oh. Yeah. I think maybe Greg Joseph might have gotten into some of that leading up to the final drive. A little tough to kick straight on when you're.
I'm gonna do. I don't even. This is bumming me out, and I have to go to the DMV today, trying to get my license reinstated. So I'm gonna let's do the stable. So I gotta get on with it.
All right, okay. This is Randy in Cottage Grove's Week 2 Minnesota Vikings dud stable.
This is the Week 2 yet another stable that should have been a stud stable, and now it's a dud stable. Hmm. Week 2, Cardinals. This is a guy who blew it two different times. If you get a little better launch angle on that PAT, we ain't even talking about the second time he blew it. I'm talking about Craig Josephs. Craig, you're an NFL kicker. I don't care where you're from, Africa or whatever. You are in the NFL now. and you got a big boot. You got a big cannon. You got a good swing. But it ain't going to matter if you're yanking and pushing, getting those low launch angles, getting balls tipped on PATs. Craig Josephs, you better look in the mirror and you better nut up, because today what you're going to see in that mirror is a dud. That's the stable.
Wait, that's it?
The whole, you only have one guy in the stable?
That's the only, he's the big guy. He's the dud this week.
The one from the defense, not Zim for the clock management?
That's the stable.
All right, that was that was Randy in Cottage Groves, week two, Minnesota Vikings.
Football. He said one thing I'd like to touch on.
Did he just hang up?
He's gone. Yeah.
It doesn't click anymore because, well, we're inside production meeting here. We wanted him to come on camera for our YouTube channel, but apparently, he's not allowed to have camera devices on his computer or phone, apparently. I don't know. Something legally.
Yes.
Do we know why he got his license revoked? I don't remember
I don't want to know.
I
don't want to know.
I don't think he's worked in 2 years now. Yeah. I don't think he's had a job in 2 years.
I don't know if we should know.
Can we get back to the crushing 4 bottles of Yegg?
Gross, dude.
Because unless that party had about 70 people there, that is an excessive amount of Yegg.
What's the most Yegg you've ever had in one sitting?
One experience for me. One experience in my 20s.
That's it?
Never again.
I
drink this stuff.
We definitely got into it a lot my freshman year at St. Cloud State. It was a very normal, before a hockey game, we would take that and put it in like a canteen and tune up before that with it. And I don't think I can't even smell Yegg without like wanting to literally throw up. It's pretty gross.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I did it once and I thought this tastes really good. I can have a few of these and never again.
Mm. Yeah. I feel like of all the things you could like, you know, tip upside down and have ready to do shots, like Yegg is not really in my top five, unless they want to be a presenting sponsor of Mackie and Judd here.
I will bathe in Jägermeister if that's
the
case.
Yeah, we'll have a Yegg hot tub in the studio. Declan and Judd can just play footsie in it. It'll be great. Who would be, if you guys had a one-person dud stable for this Vikings game, who would that, if it wasn't Greg Joseph, all right, let's take Greg Joseph off the table, who would you add to that dud stable, one person?
Yesterday's
game.
Zimmer, for sure. He had a bad game. Like, he coached a really bad game. His, you know, starting with the fact that the defense did not play as well as is expected. There were certain guys that played well. But you also have the fact that he made quite a few really questionable decisions that were bad and ultimately, right or wrong, fall directly on him. So that would be my easy one. Mike Zimmer.
Dude, I don't think it's being talked about enough. The end of the first half, Mike Zimmer is so bad with just like maneuvering the last 3 or 4 minutes of a half, right? Okay, what do we want to do if we score here? What should we do on the ensuing kickoff?
Right.
A squib kick in 2021 with one of the longest range field goal kickers in American history, right? Like, Matt Prater is a machine, even at his older age. His range goes beyond the 50-yard line. Why are you not kicking the ball through the back of the end zone? What are you worried about?
Because he said,
well, they might return a kick. How many times has someone returned a kick for a touchdown against you in your life as a defensive coach, Mike Zimmer?
He explained it. He wanted them to pick up the ball and return it to run clock.
Yeah.
He thought I'm keeping
Why would they do that?
He's thinking I'm keeping Kyler Murray off the field and the clock is then going to run during the kickoff return, and Kyler has that much less time. But you're exactly right. Matt, you played against Matt Prater. He damn near daggered you at U.S. Bank Stadium a few years back for the Lions. You know exactly what he's capable of. And, yeah, it's remarkable. He had a really bad game.
That is legitimately one of the dumbest explanations I've ever heard. Okay, so they have 25 seconds left. Kick it to the back of the end zone. What do you think the Cardinals are going to do with 25 seconds left at their own 25-yard line? They're going to run the ball. They're not going to get risky in that spot. That's the thing. Like, teams aren't looking with, like, 20 seconds to go unless you have Tom Brady and maybe if you have Pat Mahomes in that situation. almost every other quarterback, the head coach, in that situation, 20 seconds left, 25 seconds left, your own 25-yard line, you might take one stab with a pass, but you're most likely going to run the ball and shut it down. And I don't know. I guess as long as he wasn't afraid of someone returning a kick for it, as long as it wasn't from like a fear-based position, then it's a little – but that's horrible logic.
But the problem, too, is he is now, in essence, bailing on his defense, which is his pride and joy, by saying, I thought Kyler Murray might get the ball and beat us. That's what he's saying. Like, think about that. This is his – this is what he does. Like, this defense – Kyler Murray is unbelievable, and he's fun to watch, and yes, he's very difficult to stop, but your whole defense is built with we can stop quarterbacks. That's what we do, right? And you're literally telling me now, well, we were afraid Kyler Murray might get the ball and have too much time left. Like, who does he trust? He doesn't trust Kirk. He doesn't trust his defense now. Think about that. Like, how are you going to build a winning culture for your team when your calling card, you're like, well, I don't know so much about that now.
Well, yeah, and so what is the thing that you will lean on going into now? Now you got back-to-back games at home, granted, so you're gonna at least have that 70,000, fan advantage that you didn't have last year, and that will matter. Yep. That will matter. But you got Russell Wilson, you got this Browns team that's just great all over the place, like on every side of the ball. What do you lean on? Can you really go into these two games and lean on, well, defense is going to be our calling card. We're going to shut these teams down defensively. I almost think you should be leaning on the pass game. You've got these three wide receivers. Now you got Dalvin Cook, right? Your offensive line looked better in week two. You didn't commit any penalties in the first half. That was great. Congratulations. 10 penalties in the first half, two weeks ago.
Hill had to hold.
So these are conversations we've been having for months, which is, boy, your offense was like borderline one of the better offenses in the NFL. What if you took that offense to the next level? What if you really fortified the offensive line and really leaned into, working with Kirk even more? It's like they went the opposite direction, and they're still allowing 30 points per game to the first 2 weeks with a Hall of Famer on the schedule next week.
And I guarantee you, in the postgame, if the roles had been flipped and the offense had made some big plays, but for the most part played crappy, and the defense had played great, Mike would not have been as optimistic about the offense as he was yesterday about the defense. Like, he's like, yeah, we did some good things out there on defense. It's like, okay, hold on a second here. And that's the type of thing that drives people in the Vikings building crazy. Because if the offense had ultimately not played great but made some big plays, Mike would have pointed that out in a heartbeat. Yeah. And talked about how well his defense played. But because it was reversed, he tried to say, well, I mean, our defense made some. Yeah, but they allowed a lot of big plays too. And you wouldn't tolerate that. If Kirk Cousins had like two or three screw ups and played a good game beyond that, Mike would have pointed that out.
This is probably a deeper discussion for a different day, maybe later this week. But what do you think it would take for Mike Zimmer to be fired midseason? What is it? 0-6?
0-6. If you're 0-6, I think you're gone. And yes, the defense situationally played well in week two, but if his bread and butter is defense and you're allowing 30 plus points a game, 380 yards a game, I mean, it's not working anymore. I would assume it's 0-6 at the bye.
I think it's two things. 0-6 and mutiny.
Okay, what does mutiny look like?
It goes off the rails, and players are pointing fingers, and players are behind the scenes going to Spielman and executives to complain about Mike, and Mike has lost control. And you can tell. Childress, in essence, in 2010, lost control. Like, that team was off the rails. It was careening. Moss got let go by Childress, which was insubordination because Brad didn't tell the Wilfs. So I think it would take 0-6 and an absolute mutiny, which is possible. Like, I've seen it before.
Are there any – the only thing about this team is, but who coaches? Are there any players that would, like, rise up to that level on this team? And almost – that's the thing about this team, too. It just doesn't feel like – they've got some really good players. They've got some borderline Hall of Famers. They've got some Ring of Honor guys. But it just kind of feels like no one wants to grab the wheel. Even the head coach barely wants to grab the wheel. He only wants to grab the defensive wheel. is Kirk Cousins the guy that's going to go up and down the sideline in a moment of crisis and you know, tap everyone on the helmet and give an impassioned pep talk.
No.
But Thielen isn't really that guy. He just, you know, he does Adam Thielen things, and that's fine.
Right. But if you have players overall start to voice their displeasure and you start to have problems and you don't win a game, that's the only thing. I think if you're 0-6 and there's not mutiny, I don't think that they make a coaching change, in part because of this question. Who do you name to coach this team? Like, there's no Stefanski who you'd be like, okay, you know what? Get a nice long look at this up-and-coming coach, and he might be our guy. Clint Kubiak, Andre Patterson, who is a defensive guy and been coaching for, what, 35 years? So my question is, if you did that, who inherits the mess for the rest of the season?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's not like a young coach in waiting that you're looking to test out to be a head coach. It would literally just be addition by extraction, right? You would be extracting Mike Zimmer from the situation and just hoping that things get better.
Honestly,
or I don't know what the value would be, I guess.
Honestly, if you are 0-6, and I don't think that they will be, but let's just say they are.
I don't either. They're not going to be 0-6.
But let's just say that it all goes wrong. I would be a much bigger advocate of doing what they didn't do at the deadline last year and looking to move pieces so I ensure I'm as bad as I can possibly be.
Oh, is this a write that down point for a listener? Are you officially calling?
Not yet. No. I'm saying if you're 0-6, I would take door two, which is trade guys. You could have traded guys last year and you didn't. And I think not capitalizing on the lack of success from 2020 is a huge mistake.
You know, so I'm not calling for that. Thielen's one of the highest paid players on the team.
I trade him. I might look to trade
KJ
Cook.
Osborne's been your
best receiver.
I might look
to trade Cook because Cook's wearing down.
I don't think you can do that.
Say that you want them to tank right now.
I don't want them to tank.
Give that listener a
we're not there yet.
Right now.
We're not there yet. Dalvin Cook could get you something.
Say it, you coward.
Dalvin Cook could get you a little
acknowledge
something.
Acknowledge me.
Thielen could get you a little something. I'm just saying that there are some options of guys to dump.
No, there definitely are.
And I would rather do what would be perceived as a baseball move than be like, hey, here's what we're going to do. We're going to turn this thing around with Ryan Ficken.
I am still I would like to see them play a home game or two because that can make all the difference if they win a bunch of home games. I'd love to see what they do against the Seahawks, but if they don't beat the Seahawks and they start 0-3, I'm still going to give them, okay, you got three more games before the bye, including two home games. The Lions are in there. Like, can you get to the bye 3-3? If you can't get to the bye 3-3, then we can have much different conversations during that.
You episode. Asked me a question. You said, what if they are 0-6? And I'm telling you what I would do. I'd start stripping it down from the studs.
Say it.
I'm not
say you
say
want
yet.
Them to tank.
I'm not
acknowledge
there
me.
It's 0-2.
So, all right. Well, we got to go collect ourselves here before Purple Daily, which you can find anywhere you listen to podcasts, Apple, Spotify, two YouTube channels. We got Purple Daily and we've got Score North, and you can find tons of Viking stuff on both of those. Click subscribe. Tell a couple friends, click the like button if you're watching us on YouTube. We appreciate it. And we'll see you guys tomorrow for a little Who Gets It, Who Doesn't, which I'm sure we'll have a long list.